whether it's softball or soccer or baseball or basketball or whatever sport it might be, I go, okay, how much of your sport is mental?
I would say it's really high, if not 100%. If your mental side is not in a good place, you're not where you want to be. I think people learn that really quickly when they enter the league. There's so many high demands.
So then my follow-up question is, how much of your time and your training are you deliberately spending training the mental side of your game?
Welcome to our next episode of Ditto.
Ditto.
Matt, how are you doing? You got a great shirt on there.
I know. I was just going to say this. I'm so glad you brought it up. So for those that can't see me, I am in fact rocking some Washington Spirit gear. Oh, you can kind of see it.
It looks good.
It is a black shirt. One of my favorites. It's going to be, very comfortable, very wonderful shirt. I need to wear it around where I'm living and so people can know what's
educate
up.
Everyone
Washington
on the
Spirit,
best
baby.
Yeah, the best team in the league for sure.
Yes, ma'am.
Nice. One day we'll get you a jersey, don't worry.
I know. I was just telling Ashley, once I save up a little more money, a jersey is on its way, because that's like the true soccer fan thing to do, right? Is wear a jersey.
Yeah, that's when you've made it as a loyal fan, but we'll get there. Yeah. Don't worry.
We'll get there. Yep.
Cool. All right. Well, today's episode is pretty special. We are in the month of May, and May is Mental Health Awareness Month. So we both thought that it'd be very fitting to have a conversation around mental health awareness, discuss some of the differences between what types of support is out there with mental health providers, but also mental performance coach, and what kind of all that looks like. I think this topic can be very intimidating. I know it's been intimidating for me in the past just because I didn't know. A lot of it was so unknown. And I think because of the help of people around me and people educating me, but also the power of social media and having more conversations like around these topics, I've been able to like learn, obviously working with you, Matt, and also the resources that the Spirit and the League have provided us has helped me. But I feel like this is still an area that I can continue to learn more about. And so in the spirit of mental health awareness, Matt, would you kind of like to start us off on maybe talking about the differences of different health professionals and the resources that they provide and what care that they can provide for those that need it?
Absolutely. In the Washington Spirit, that is the Mental Health Awareness Month. Okay, so I want to preface kind of this explanation of mental health, mental performance, psychiatry, psychologists, all of these mental health or mind health terms with what I do. I get referred to often as a psychologist. I am not a psychologist. So I have a PhD essentially in applied sports psychology, which is providing, in the simplest terms, mental skills training and strategies for individuals and teams from mostly sport, yes, obviously, and coaches and athletes, but music and military and business and a number of other domains. That's essentially what I do. And that is one space of this kind of overarching umbrella of all these terms within mind health or mental health. So that's me. Okay. So I am not a psychologist. I'm not a licensed counselor. I'm not in marriage and family therapy. I am in essentially applied sports psychology. That's what I have a PhD in. And I am a certified mental performance consultant. Anyways, there's this wonderful graph. And maybe we can, when we post this on Instagram, Ashley, or on YouTube or wherever, we can flash this image or somehow connect it. And I'm showing it on my screen right now for those that can't see. Essentially, I'm going to describe what this wonderful infographic entails. And so the very top of it is called Mind Health Professionals. And I received this, and I don't know if she was the one that put this together, but I'm going to contribute it to her anyway. So well done, Dr. Kenza Gunter. She's a brilliant, I believe she actually is a psychologist, but she's also in the space of mental performance as well. I think her title, she has the coolest title, Director of Mind Health for the NBA, National Basketball Association. I know a few of our listeners have heard of that association. Anyways, she put this together because she, I'm assuming, because she was also president of the Association for Applied Sports Psychology, which I'm a member of, for a number of years as well. And she put this together because I'm assuming she ran into these questions a lot. Are you a psychologist? Are you a CMPC? Are you a psychiatrist? Are you a mental performance coach? Blah, 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 blah. And so the overview of this is essentially she's breaking it down into three categories with, again, the overarching theme or title of it being mind health professionals. So the first one she has, or that this infographic has, is mental health providers. So this is where your licensed professionals, including psychologists, counselors, clinical social workers, marriage and family therapists, etc., come into play. So they have mental health expertise. They understand, or are coming especially from a theoretical lens, this idea of thoughts, feelings, behaviors, and relationships, and they work across kind of this continuum of mental health, and they diagnose and treat mental health conditions, right? Especially if you're licensed in the state of wherever you're working. We've all heard of mostly these individuals, right? And I'm assuming, correct me if I'm wrong, Ashley, like when I tell people that I'm in sports psychology, this is mostly where people's minds go. Like, oh, so you want me to come sit down on your couch and you're going to talk about my childhood and diagnose me with all my problems, right? Yeah. I've gotten that before. Yeah. And again, I think a lot of people that's where their minds go, pun intended, when they think of sports psychology or performance psychology. So that's just one domain, okay? The other domain that's on this infographic is psychiatrists. So this is essentially what psychologists and counselors and social workers are doing, but now from a medical point of view. So they're actually providing medicine and diagnosing and working across this continuum of both mental health and medication management. So my knowledge of being a psychiatrist is limited, but from my understanding, most professionals within psychiatry have to go through medical school, and then they specialize within mental health / psychiatry, and they're able to do, again, medication management and diagnose and mental health management, etc. That's psychiatry or psychiatrists. Now here's the last one. Again, three categories all underneath this umbrella of mental health professionals. Your third one is mental performance consultants. That's what I do. So essentially, again, it's expertise in mental skills training and strategies for performance. Individuals in this space, again, like myself, are trained in applied sports psychology and sports science. So especially for certified mental performance consultants, when you take this exam or when you're going to become a CMPC, there's a little bit of psychology involved. There's a little bit of counseling involved, kinesiology, exercise science, sports psychology. There's all these different domains that you have to kind of know a little bit about on each of them. And so through graduate school, graduate training, you have to have at least a master's degree to take this coursework. And then you get supervised for a number of hours, 400 hours. And then you're able to sit for an exam, just like most other certifications, to be able to be a CMPC. And that's through, again, the Association for Applied Sports Psychology. And this is also, coaches development and team and organizational dynamics and team culture enhancement, et cetera. I think kind of more educational when it comes to mental performance consultants. Okay, that's all three of them, right? They're all distinct. They're all separate. However, there can be some individuals. There are very few of them out there because I know many of the individuals in my space. It's not a huge domain or a huge field. It is growing, which is great. But there are very few that can do all three or just two of them. I mean, Kenza, again, Dr. Kenza Gunter, who, from my understanding, put this infographic together, she is licensed, but she's also CMPC. And so she addresses mental performance needs, but she also addresses some of these mental health concerns as well and is able to diagnose and be a provider or a clinician. I'm not. all three of these require different trainings. Obviously, there's some crossover, but all three, especially in graduate school, when you go to get a PsyD or a PhD, or you go to med school to become a psychiatrist, there's just different trainings, different certifications, different education. And it's interesting because all three are very, very necessary for this holistic health or mind health of the individual, right? Ideally, in my mind, and I'm thinking mostly at the college to professional level, and again, mostly in sports, you have all three, or maybe you have two of each. So you have six people on staff, just like a strength and conditioning staff. And so you're able to address mental performance needs, mental health needs, and maybe even psychiatry needs. Here's how I distinguish it when I go to present to coaches or student athletes. This isn't necessarily the right way to do it or the wrong way to do it. It's just how I do it. And I think it's been an effective or efficacious way in trying to understand what the differences are. Most athletes know what a strength and conditioning coach is and who an athletic trainer is, right? Not everybody on the team needs to see the athletic trainer, especially on a daily basis. It's mostly when you're hurt or overcoming an injury or coming back from injury, right?
Yeah.
But everyone needs to see the strength and conditioning coach because it's a regular part of their training on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, getting faster, stronger, bigger, etc. Strength coaches are what mental performance coaches are for the mind. And so oftentimes you'll hear people in my field say I'm a mental strength coach because they're doing daily consistent trainings to help attention, to help imagery, to help emotional regulation, leadership skills, team cohesion skills, etc. The mental health providers and even the psychiatrist are more like the athletic trainers. Absolutely, they're necessary, but they're not always the ones to go see on a daily basis. Okay. Yeah. I feel like I've been talking for a while. Does that all make sense? Did I distill that down or break that down to where you think it can kind of be digestible and understandable for a lot of these viewers or listeners, viewers and listeners, I guess?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's something that the more you get exposed to it, the more you understand. And you, I think that analogy of a strength coach and an athletic trainer is good. I also think about it too, like if you go to the doctor's office, normally you have, say you broke your arm, a nurse is going to come in, she's going to evaluate you, and she's going to be like, okay, we're going to go have you see our hand and arm specialist. We're not going to send you to this doctor because they specialize in something else. Like there's so many different types of doctors that specialize in different skills, and I think this is essentially exactly the same thing, and they're all so important. That's why you can't just have one profession cover all three. I feel like multiple areas of all these very important topics and needs, and everyone's different and needs different things. So yeah, I think the way you explained it was really helpful, and I think it's something that like I didn't understand for the longest time, and so I kind of like avoided the topic. And I think the topic of mental health is becoming less and less taboo to talk about, which is great, but I still think there's so much more room for improvement. I think people shy away from it because of these little nuances that we don't truly understand. But for me, something that's been really helpful is going to the people that you do know who are in areas to help guide you into the right direction and to connect you with the right people. So like, for example, we didn't have this resource back in the day when we started working together. So I was able to get connected to you, obviously through my husband, Jeff. But now at the Spirit, we have obviously like our athletic trainers, but we also have a mental performance coach who's with us every single day. His name's David. He's great. And so he's a great resource to us, and he can help us with anything, sport, mental performance, leadership, anything basically in life that revolves around like performance. And he's made it very clear to us when he talks to us like what his expertise is, and then also areas where he can then pass us on to people who have different expertise in whatever our needs may be at the time. And I think it's just really important to know, use the resources that you do have around you. And if those people can't provide you with the help that you need, they will be able to pass you on to the right person. I think that's also important to know, because I feel like people will sometimes not say anything about needing or wanting help in a certain area because they don't know who to ask, or they're afraid that they're going to be asking the right person. But I think essentially everyone around you wants to help. And so I think that's first and foremost to think about. And then you can find the right help from there. But I think the intimidation factor of not knowing where to go sometimes overpowers us taking action and asking for help in whatever area it may be. So I think going over all of these is really helpful. So thanks for doing that.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question, because I think it's super pertinent to the conversation in this month of mental health awareness. Is it getting better that you've seen in your experience with the teams and the women that you've been around to essentially not or get past that stigma of seeking help when mentally they know they need it, in your experience?
Oh yeah, it's gotten so much better.
Good. Yeah,
it's something that we didn't talk about. I didn't hear people talk about, like, naturally in normal conversation until the past 3 or 4 years. Ratifying our first CBA with the NWSL Players Association was huge. We were able to negotiate for mental health leave, and several players have already, like, used that and have expressed like how much it's helped them. And I applaud those players for sharing those experiences, because I think from some people from an outsider perspective, they can maybe be judgmental about those players because they don't know why they're taking a mental health leave, but we all know that it's really important. So for players to fight for it to actually be a resource and something that they can use is one thing, but then for players to actually step up and use it is a whole nother thing. And it's super powerful when they share those experiences as well. And I don't think everyone has to share their experiences. I think everyone is in a different spot and comfortability and like what they want to share about their life and what they don't want to share. But I'm just super grateful that we've gotten to a point where we're in a league that provides mental health resources, and also that time away from a sport when people need to take that time away. And then also this past year, before this season, we had David on board part-time, but now he's full-time. And that's just been our league and our club listening to players on what they need and what they want access to and what's going to help them best as holistic athletes. And us as players, we've been really good at advocating for ourselves. So I'm super proud of us for doing that. And we've seen a huge push for more resources. And now I think it's just players understanding those resources, using those resources, and then continuing to just educate ourselves and educate everyone around them on how to use those resources. But yeah, it's changed tremendously.
Which is so great to see, just the vulnerability and the openness around the conversation. You know, I think it's slowly changing in professional sport. I was in the space for a little bit of the military, more particular, more specific to the U.S. Army. And at the time, it still had this really strong stigma behind it. If you sought out this mental health or mind health professional, you were perceived as being weak. And so then in return, you're wanting to be promoted to captain or to some other officer type of position in the U.S. Army. It's like, you can't because you're quote unquote weak, right? And so I'm hoping that even in the space like the military, where there's a lot of machismo, it can get better. And people hopefully are realizing, like a lot of professional athletes and really just athletics in general, that the mind just plays an enormous role when it comes to performance. And everyone I know listening to this are shaking their heads going, yeah, well, no bleepity bleep, right?
Yeah.
Here's something I ask coaches all the time, and student athletes, but a lot of coaches that are new to this and that are trying to figure out, like, okay, do I need to provide a mental health professional, or should I bring in a mental performance coach, or both? Again, being more consistent with your mental training is where I'm coming from. And so that's where my biases lay. But here's a question I ask coaches, whether it's softball or soccer or baseball or basketball or whatever sport it might be. I go, okay, how much of your sport, if you had to guess, is mental? What's the percentage? Right? And I know we've talked about this before and had this conversation, but if I'd ask you, Ashley, on average, just in the sport of soccer, if you had to answer that question for the entire NWSL, a lot of pressure. Here we go.
Oh, no.
What would you say is the average response for that percentage that people would say?
I would say it's really high, if not 100%, to be honest, because I feel like if your mental side is not in a good place, you don't perform well, or you don't perform to where you want. You're not where you want to be. And I think people learn that really quickly when they enter the league, just because there's so much, there's so many high demands, like physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, socially, like there's pressures from all different angles. And we're just competitive people, right? So we want to be successful 100% of the time. Are we successful 100% of the time? No. And so it's a lot to manage, especially going from whether it was college or just youth soccer, coming into this professional environment, a league that is growing in quality, but also in popularity. It can be very, very challenging. And so I know that every player that I've talked to about it, the mental side is just, it comes up a lot more naturally, just because people feel the impact that it has. And I've also heard teammates express to each other, like, we've seen a teammate like maybe go through an injury or a breakup, and teammates have been like, oh my gosh, I'm concerned for this person, not just because they're going through this hard thing, but also like their mental state, their mental side of them like handling this challenge. And I think that is pretty amazing that people are also aware. Of course, we're going to be concerned about someone if they break their leg or do something that's very visible, but are we concerned about people when we can't actually see what they're struggling with, if we can't see like what's going on in their head or what their thoughts are about themselves? And so I think showing that concern for each other is really powerful. And I think it's accredited to just people talking more about it and being open and vulnerable. And it just being a more common conversation when we talk about an athlete's overall like health and well-being. And I think it's really, really cool.
Yeah. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I love that you said 100%. I would agree. I don't think we'll ever be able to actually find a percentage unless there's some brilliant scientist out there that is really good at assessing and evaluating these things. Anyways, similarly, when I ask that question to golfers or baseball players or softball players or whomever, they say something very similar. I think the lowest I've heard in doing this for over a decade is like 70% of my sport is mental. But the average usually is like 80 to 90 is kind of what I hear. And that's in my experience. So then my follow-up question is, okay, if you just agreed, you know, the majority agreed that your sport is 90% mental, how much of your time and your training are you deliberately spending training the mental side of your game? You just told me that 90% of it is mental. And then most of them will go, oh, I spend next to zero time deliberately and consistently training. And I'm not saying that 90% of your time needs to be spent training only the mental side of your game. My only point is a very large, very impactful portion of your game is mental. And just like the physical, the mental can be trained, right? And so here are two kind of discussion topics for you, Ashley, to get going. Well, we've already been going to continue to go.
To keep chugging along.
One is, why do so many neglect this fact? We kind of just assume that one is mentally tough and that's it. And she either has it or she doesn't. And then two is, what have you done to be deliberate, to be consistent in addressing at least some of that 90% of your game, or 100 or whatever percentile you agree to? Does that make sense? Was that too many questions in one?
What was the first question again?
I knew it. I asked too many questions. I do that way too many times, way too often. Okay, first question is, why do you think so many, especially in sport, neglect this idea of, my sport is 90% mental, but I don't do a bleepity thing about it to actually train the mental side? Like, why does that still exist? I think we're getting better. I really do. But there's so many that still just think you innately have it, and or you don't. Anyways, thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I touched on it a little bit. Is like, I feel like it's an area that we're still learning about, and it's kind of like this unknown. Like, people know that if you go out and you spend more time practicing, like, how many times has that been preached? Like, you just need to practice more. You just need to practice more, like, to get better.
Right.
But it's not preached a ton, like, are you meditating? Are you breathing? Like, what are your thoughts? What are you thinking when you mess up here? Like, that's not usually at the forefront of a conversation with even like coaches or in like youth. Like, it's usually like, oh, well, you're just practice more, dribble through the cones more, you know? And all of that is really good and it's helpful. But there's a whole other area of the game, aspect of the game, that we just don't emphasize enough. And so I feel like that's why we don't practice it, or we don't really put into practice the things that we know about it, or if we don't even know anything about it, so we don't do it. I think naturally some people may be better at it than others because of their environment and maybe the support that they have, like from their parents or coaches, and the conversations that they do have with their parents or coaches. I know for me, I had a really close relationship with my dad and my sister growing up, and so I feel like my self-talk was always fairly like positive and like reassuring, and I was I guess quote-unquote, I know we don't like the word, like, mentally tough, because I was just surrounded by good people and support. But like, once I left, I noticed a difference in that, because like that support was gone, or I wasn't exposed to it as often as I was growing up, living at home like every single day, like having conversations with my mom and dad and my sister and brother about school, about soccer, like constantly like conversing about these things. And then I leave for college, and it's like I'm only conversing about these things if I initiate conversation with my teammates or my roommate, but I'm so busy. Like, I'm not sitting down at the dinner table with my family every single night. And so I feel like I notice a little bit of a difference there. And then once I started playing professionally, I feel like that gap just like significantly increased. Like, wow, this is missing. Like, it is really only up to me if I want to get better with my mental performance. I feel like I naturally just like reaped the benefits of my great family and support friends, but then once I left, I was a little bit more on my own. So I think that's another reason why we don't talk about it a lot, is because we don't really notice when we need it or when we don't need it. And it's kind of vague. I feel like it's kind of vague sometimes. And also, you add on to soccer, just like life in general. Am I not performing well because I just broke up with my boyfriend? Or am I not performing well because I like failed a test or didn't get into a class or a program that I wanted? How do I address that? Do I address this aspect of life? Is it a soccer problem? Like, where does it all lie? And I feel like we don't really know exactly how to like pinpoint the problem and solve it sometimes, because there's just like so many factors. I know that was a long answer to your question, but for me, I feel like that's kind of how it's evolved and how I was able to come to the realization that like, okay, I need to be a little bit more intentional about this in order to see a benefit.
Totally. No, that was beautiful. And that leads me into my second question, I think even more beautiful-ler-ler-ly. Here's the second part. Once that realization is there, oh, a large portion of my game, of my sport, is mental. I need to be deliberate and consistent about training a large portion of my game. What does it actually look like from like a tactical standpoint? to go in and train, especially with a mental performance coach. Now, again, it could be a mental health provider if you're suffering or you're experiencing some more mental health concerns, and that person can address some of the mental performance concerns. But more often than not, just from a mental performance coach perspective, working with somebody on a daily basis, the strength coach of the mind, tactically, that approach, what does that look like, and what has that looked like for you? What, and how could you like educate other soccer players, especially youth, in seeking this out and incorporating it into their training?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think just sharing the evolution like of our relationship and how it started and where it's at now is a really good example. In like 2019, when I was like, okay, I feel like there's an area of my game that is missing, and it's definitely the mental side, because I feel like I'm getting in my own way. And I had conversations with my husband, Jeff, and I was just like, I think I need to like work with a sports psychologist, mental performance. Like, I feel like I need, this is an area that I can improve. But I was really intimidated to have that conversation, or even just like to seek out that help, because I, like you, like we've been talking about, I didn't really understand like where that went. I was like, I don't need to sit on a couch and discuss all my childhood problems with someone. Like, I thought that's what it was. And so I was like, I don't want to go do that. Not that that's bad. And I think that's a great, like, a lot of people do need that. And I probably, now that I've gone through a lot of conversations with you, I was like, okay, maybe there are some things I could address. But I was intimidated because I didn't know what it looks like. Then you came to one of our games when we were at Germantown, Maryland, the Soccerplex, and I was able, like you, for people who don't know or don't remember, Jeff and Matt are cousins, and so we were able to have a discussion, and I feel like that naturally made me feel comfortable enough to like reach out to you and be like, hey, like, can we work together? What does that look like? And I remember you like sending me a sheet, and we like kind of went over like goals and like what, you know, what areas we want to improve in. But you did say one thing that I feel like really stuck with me, was like, you were like, our goal as we work together is for you to not have to like use me or need me. Like, I want to provide you with the tools for you to continue to like grow as a player and to be able to navigate problems on your own. Like, I basically want to provide you with the tools. And I thought that was pretty eye-opening for me, because like I said, this is new. I didn't really know what this area of work looked like. And I really liked that, because I was like, okay, like I'm in the driver's seat here. Like, we're only gonna get as far as I'm willing to like put in the work. Like, it's not like, Matt, you're gonna do it for me, right, and you're gonna hold my hand the rest of my career. And I feel like we've truly gotten to a point where like you've taught me so much, and I've been able to like use the tools. We talked probably like once a week when we first started working together. And that was pretty consistent for maybe like the first year or so.
Yeah.
Little, like, kind of off and on. Yeah. And then just like as I've navigated my career and gone through like different challenges and ups and downs, like, you've always been there. I've always known that like I have your support and help, but I've also been able to implement a lot of the tools that you've provided me with and like use them in my day-to-day life. Doesn't mean my life's going to be perfect by any means, but I have these tools and these resources, and I've created these habits mostly of like self-awareness and like self-talk that have helped me like get through a lot of things, especially day-to-day. So that's kind of what that journey has looked like for me.
Yeah. No, thanks for sharing. You're so nice. It's been truly an honor to be able to be with you these past 5 years. That's an understatement. And so for those wondering, as a coach, as an athlete, performer in general, like, okay, well, what would this look like? It's essentially that. You seeking out somebody in this mental performance space, and for me, make sure they have at least a master's degree, and even more additionally beneficial, they are also a certified mental performance consultant. That essentially just means they've had more training and more competency in theory to be able to add to their CV, so to speak. And then seek them out and ask how they can help you. And then you have these conversations, these ongoing conversations, where like what we did, Ash. Like, okay, what do you want to accomplish? Like, what is this going to look like a year from now? Why do you want to get, quote unquote, mentally stronger? What does that look like for you? The perfect Ashley, if you had to paint her mind in a year from now, 2 years from now, what is that like? Then hopefully the person on the other end, that mental performance coach, is competent enough to essentially program, right, just like a strength coach, something that you can start doing on a daily and or weekly and or monthly basis. And the consistency and being deliberate with that is just crucial. In fact, I know this sounds harsh, people, and I'm not a harsh professional, but oftentimes when I run into people and they bring up this question of like, okay, you know, Dr. Moore, what is this going to look like? Can we work together? I go, absolutely. But if you're not willing to be deliberate and consistent with these things, at least for the next 5 to 6 months, I don't want to waste your time and I don't want you to waste my time.
Yeah.
And some people I know are like, whew, sheesh, he's coming at me, bringing the fire. But most people, like, I think similar to your experience, Ashley, it's like, oh, he's serious about it. And he's really serious about working with me and being deliberate and consistent. I just need to drive the car, so to speak, and do what we're going over and practice what we're going over. It's not going to be perfect, but I am going to hopefully feel and notice a difference of more attention management, more regularity with my emotions, more efficacious self-talk. I notice that I have a horrible negative self-talk going on all the time. Well, with deliberate and consistent effort, you can change that relationship. And then the self-talk kind of becomes your friend, but it's a skill set just like anything else. And so you have to be really good about practicing it and integrating it. And so again, for those that are wondering how to do this, seek out these individuals. You can find me, if I'm being specific, the Association for Applied Sports Psychology website. You can get on and they have a link that says find a CMPC or find a CMPC near me or something. And so geographically it'll pop up or populate the nearest CMPC to wherever you're located. It doesn't have to be in person. Ashley and I, in fact, have done, I mean, have we done all of our I was just going to say, I think we've actually spoken in person twice over 5 years. Something like that. And that's neither good nor bad. That's just been good. I mean, for our experience, it's been a really, really effective route. Mm-hmm. Some people, they want to go all in person. Some people want to go hybrid, or some people want to go fully virtual or remote. And whatever works for you, that's the beauty of these consultations and this work, is you can do that and you have the opportunity and flexibility to do that. And so seek them out. And then when you really are serious about it and want to contribute just like to your mental health, just like you've contributed to your physical health all these years, start doing it on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. And in theory, you're going to see and feel results that holistically will hopefully provide a greater enhancement in your performance. Anyways, that's my soapbox. Go sports psychology.
Yes. Definitely. I think it's also important to address that, like, you don't have to be struggling with something, or you don't have to have a problem that needs to be solved in order to start doing this. It's just something that's going to benefit you no matter what. And I think for me, I've had this question a lot lately, so I'm just going to bring it up. A lot of people have been asking me about the World Cup and like, how were you able to get through that? Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh my gosh, blah, 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 whatever. It's all real. It sucked. Anyway, we're not going to dive into it. But if I started working with you after the World Cup, it would have been a lot longer of a journey and of a process. I feel like because I had built such a solid foundation in self-awareness, mental performance, emotional regulation, the ability just to like talk about my feelings and understand what I need in moments of good times and moments of bad times, and how to like perceive myself and to judge myself. I feel like we talk about that a lot of like work sometimes, like we're the hardest on ourselves and we would never do that to anyone else. If I didn't have that foundation before that challenge, it would have been a lot harder. So getting off my soapbox now, but I think the point of emphasis here is to make sure that you don't have to be struggling with something in order to right. seek help or just to improve in this area of mental performance.
Right. It's about the proactive orientation, not the reactive orientation. And to be proactive, again, just like physical training, you need to be consistent with it. And so when you have your didn't make the World Cup moments, or maybe it's much smaller, or maybe it's bigger, you're able to get through it. It's not that it's going to be easy, but you're able to emotionally and mentally especially get through that. And in Ashley's case, come out stronger with new perspective on life in general because of her proactive orientation towards that. Yeah. God, just beautiful. I love this stuff. Ashley, anything else you want to talk about in relation to these wonderful topics?
I think one thing that I'd like to talk about, which I feel like is not talked about a ton, is yeah. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to be like in a team environment like 24/7, and I get to be around my wonderful teammates. They make my life so much better because they're just super fun to be around. But I think one thing that we don't talk about enough is how we can support the people around us, whether we know them well and whether we spend a lot of time with them or whether we don't. And I think especially with like May being Mental Health Awareness Month, I think it's just a perfect time to continue to people to encourage people to just look out for yeah. others around them. And I don't know, do you have any thought? I mean, I could probably talk a lot about times where like I've struggled yeah. and how teammates have supported me, maybe because I've had a bad week or going through a hard time. But is there anything from like your perspective, or I guess your knowledge in this area, of how we could best support those around us, whether they're friends, family, or strangers?
Yeah, and God, there's a whole host of things that we can do. Honestly, in coming up through this kind of mind health field, and this being my profession and a huge just passion of mine, but also just being a human being, a father, a husband, etc., one of the biggest things that I have found that has been the most helpful personally and professionally are regular check-ins. And that can be a text message. That can be you in person saying, what up? How are things going? That can be a phone call. That can be a, what do you call on TikTok when you send somebody a message, like a direct message, or hit me up in my DMs? DMs, there it is. Gaw, I'm
oh,
cool.
No,
I don't even,
you're dating
I don't
yourself.
Even know what that's
don't
called.
Don't do that.
Oh my gosh. That can be a DM. Anyways, a check-in, some sort of check-in with your people. And they don't even have to be your people directly. Maybe you kind of know them. But just simply asking how are things going and how I can help is mm-hmm. a huge, huge, huge thing. I want to share a list because I'm so glad you brought this up about how, especially coaches, but this is, I mean, this also hugely pertains to just being a teammate as well, how you can indirectly support athlete mental health. There are five areas or five ways to do this that we've listed out here. Before I do that, Ashley, was there anything else that you wanted to touch on in relation to that question?
Yeah, but I can do it after this because I feel like this is good.
Okay. Just really quickly. Five ways to indirectly support athlete mental health. Number one, embrace differences. We all come from different backgrounds and demographics. Embracing those, accepting those is huge. I think we all recognize that and understand that, but maybe aren't good about actually doing it. Two is respecting boundaries. This one's interesting because everyone's boundaries, again, are going to be a little bit different. And so asking directly what they need, what they want, is a huge and really effective way to enforce this. Three, reinforcing effort. So this really comes from a coach's perspective. Instead of giving feedback or criticizing, maybe is the better word, criticizing the player, criticize the effort or reinforce the effort when you're the coach and you're the leader trying to indirectly support their mental health. Four is model flexibility. So I understand, Ashley, that you're a professional soccer player. It's huge. It's a huge part of your life. But there are also other parts of your life that are very, very important. So as the coach, as the leader, as a teammate, model what's it like to be a mother, to be a friend, to be a partner, to be a religious person or non-religious, to do something else outside of sport, right? You're a human being as well. And then number five, which is huge for me because I love Matthew Walker's work, for those that are interested in finding more out about sleep, and maybe we'll do a whole episode on this because it's fascinating, promoting sleep. So 7 to 9 hours is the recommended dosage of getting sleep every single night. And so if your program, if your schedule is interfering with sleep, maybe you need to reevaluate what's going on within your training to promote that. Okay, so those are the five ways really quickly. Embrace differences, mm-hmm. respect boundaries, reinforce effort, model flexibility, and promote sleep. Now go you.
Those are great. Those are also good. And I agree. I think we should have an episode solely on sleep because I'm very passionate about it as well.
Yep.
But I think I want to talk about the first two, about embracing differences and respecting boundaries. And you touched on it a little bit, but like everyone's different. Everyone has different needs. Everyone has differences and everyone has different boundaries and what they need and don't need. And so that can be really hard and sometimes kind of daunting. But like you said, regular check-ins are really, really important. And something that I've struggled, I feel like I'm not trying to like boost myself, but I really like checking in with people. I feel like it's just something, I don't know, I think my mom, she's just always been really good at it. She's that neighbor that will bring everyone cookies for absolutely no reason and just is really good at talking to people. And so it's a skill that I've developed and I just am very like proud of, and I really like doing it. But on the flip side, I'm really bad at asking for help or going to people and being like, hey, I need someone to talk to. And I think we all need to be better at being the ones to check in, but also being okay with like, if people aren't checking in with us, checking in with someone. And someone that I talk to a lot, obviously, like naturally, is my husband. But a conversation that we've had, and he's probably going to laugh when he hears this, over and over, is me coming home from like, maybe I've had a pretty bad week of training, and I've had like consistently like 3 or 4 days in a row where I come home and I'm just like upset about something, whether it's training or sometimes I'm just in a bad mood, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, Jeff, I don't know why I'm just in a really bad mood, and I don't feel like anyone cares about me. No one checks in on me. No one asks me how I'm doing. I'm kind of in this like woe with me attitude because it's not true. Like everyone around me is great, but I'm just kind of like in this corner, and I put myself in this corner, and I don't want to do anything to get out of it. And him being the supportive but also very direct husband is like, well, Ash, people probably don't know that you feel this way. If they did know that you felt this way, I'm sure every single one of them would jump up, give you a hug, ask you what you need, go buy you ice cream. Like, everyone loves you and they would support you. He's like, but you do a really good job. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but like, you're very professional. You don't show your emotions a lot. And I think that goes along the lines of everyone is different. Like, some people are very loud and very vocal and they're super fun to be around, but you know when they're having a bad day because they're not as rambunctious as they normally are. They're not as loud. And so it's easier to notice that, hey, maybe they need a little bit of love or someone to check in on them. But someone like me, maybe whose like heart rate is always just like this, it's hard to tell if I'm having a bad day because I'm not super like up and I'm not super down all the time. And so I think that's another thing to just like be aware of when it comes to yourself and like how you present needing help, because it's not that the people around you don't care, but they may not know. But also on the flip side, that's why it's so good just to check in constantly with people all the time, because we need it. And that connection is super important. And I know this is a saying and people have heard it before, but like, check on your strong friends. And I truly like believe in that, because I feel like it's a lot of the times we hear about people who we perceive as really, really strong kind of like struggling are suffering in silence a lot. And so I think that consistency of checking in with each other is really, really important. And the more we check in, the better we'll be able to understand each other's differences and understand those boundaries and how we can help others. Like, if I think about my teammates, I know Andy Sullivan loves hugs. She's like made that very clear. And so she gives a lot of hugs and she also receives a lot of hugs. And I admire that a lot about her, because I'm like, oh, wow, she's been able to vocalize to us like what she likes and what she needs. And that's a skill that I feel like I can get better at. But that's what it's been so fun to be a part of a team and to be able to like navigate the differences of different teammates and understand what they need and they don't need. And it's always something that I feel like you just continue to just add layers to when people go through the highs and the lows and how to be there for each other and how to support each other. But yeah, I think that's something that's really important, and I'm glad you shared those five things to support athletes' mental health, because it's really important. And sometimes, and a lot of us are probably doing it, but we just aren't putting the words and the awareness to it. But I feel like when you put the words and emphasize the importance of it, then I think we'll continue to all get better at it. But yeah, I'm super passionate about it, and I think it's really, really important.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. In fact, ditto. last thing I want to say, and I know I've done this with you before, Ashley, and kind of some of my check-ins with you. When you do check in with someone, don't allow them to just say, good. How are you doing? I'm good. Oh, good. Okay. Well, see you tomorrow. So oftentimes what I say, if you're going to tell me you're good, unpack good. But if you're not good, tell me why you're not good. And I preface that a lot of the times when I ask people when I'm checking in. So my challenge to everyone listening, when you do throw these regular check-ins, and then when you do it as well, you're trying to check in about your health as well. Unpack it a little bit. Are you really good or are you not? And what does that look like? And what can I do or what can they do to be of assistance so that, in fact, you can be just a little more gooder?
Gooder.
Ooh, yes. Gooder needs to be our sunglass sponsors. We should contact Gooder, their sunglass thingies. Anyways, that was just,
we'll send this clip straight to them.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, Gooder, come on now. Okay, Ashley, I think this has been an amazing conversation. I didn't anticipate it going this long, but I know we're both hugely passionate about this, so no surprise. Yeah. Anything else before we slowly wrap up this awesome conversation?
No, I think that's it. Happy Mental Health Awareness Month, y'all.
Yes, go check up with your mental health. You got this. Bye, everybody.
Bye.